When Glenys Oogjes started working for Animals Australia in 1983, she was its only employee, working as a part-time coordinator. Today, she's the CEO of Animals Australia, and the organisation spends around $15 million a year on animal protection programs. After her 40 years in animal welfare advocacy as, quote, a calm bulwark for animal justice, Glenys was named Victoria's Senior Australian of the Year in 2024. Glenys Oogjes, welcome to the year that made me, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here, and thank you for the congratulations. It's wonderful.
Animals Australia describes itself as Australia's foremost national animal protection agency. I suppose in this space, the letters RSPCA are probably the most instantly recognisable, but could you tell us more about Animals Australia, its history, and how you got involved with it?
Yes, certainly. Oh, gosh, that's a long story, as you've just said, 40 years. Animals Australia started off as a federation back in 1980, and as you've indicated, I joined a little bit later. But, we're certainly grown so much over that time and changed the ways we do things. But primarily now, we have the largest online following, social media following, and such, and a huge array of supporters. And things have changed a lot. We've mostly known, I think, for our investigations, particularly live animal export investigations in the Middle East and elsewhere in Indonesia, but also bringing issues to the fore here, that is showing people how particularly farm animals, but not only, are kept in this day and age. And a lot of it's not nice. And so, we've had a number of exposés and changes that have followed the greater awareness in the community.
Yes, I think it's those exposés in particular and the footage that your organisation has been able to gain, which has really been a huge driver of awareness and change in this country and beyond. How did that practice of sort of getting the critical footage come about within the organisation?
Well, for the first 20 years or so of the organisation, it was very hard to even get photos of things that happened, particularly overseas, but even here, that is within factory farms, meaning in intensive farming practices, pigs and chickens, you couldn't get inside. So things happening behind the walls. The way it happened for us is I invited Lynn White, an ex-police officer from South Australia, to join us. And Lynn's investigation abilities and courage were so important. The very first investigation that she was able to undertake with a colleague was in the Middle East, in Kuwait, first meeting and then following sheep that arrived from Australia on ships. And again, absolutely meant that Australians, we as well, could look and see what was happening to animals that have started their life on Australian farms and gone across the seas and then into countries, most of which don't have animal protection laws at all.
Yeah, it's pretty fair to say that Lynn White was a pretty good recruit for Animals Australia, Glenys. You've got to be happy with that one. But this segment's not about Lynn White. It's not even about Animals Australia, Glenys. So we've gone back to the beginning of the organisation. Let's go back to your origins. Could you tell us about your early years, where you grew up, and I suppose in particular, where your relationship with animals developed?
Yeah, well, that does go right back because I was born on a dairy farm in northeast Victoria, and it was mainly a dairy farm, but in those days most farmers had other animals as well. So I grew up with dairy cows and calves, with pigs and piglets, with sheep and goats and a lot of chooks and a fairly large family. And it was a wonderful upbringing, but of course it also steeped me in country living and the ways that farm animals were used to make a living for people. And I thought it was wonderful. It did mean I learned a lot about animals and their personalities, knew all of the names of the cows, for example, and grew up riding horses way before I even learned how to ride a bike. So a country upbringing.
That's interesting because a lot of time on a farm could also expose you to some of the harsh realities of the way that humans and farmers deal with animals. And for some people, that leads to a sort of acceptance of those practices. Did your interest in animal protection emerge from your years on the farm, or did that come later?
They came much later, and indeed, you're quite right that your early views are formed in those years. And at the time, I don't think I questioned it. I certainly did in hindsight, but at the time I thought it was the way of the world. Indeed, my parents, whenever, and I did on occasions question, for example, sending bobby calves, that is the offspring of cows that are no longer needed on the farm, sending them off to slaughter. I did question that, and I know that my mum hated to see the truck go off when the bobby calves that she'd been helping to raise went off. So in hindsight, and even then I questioned it, but I didn't. I didn't question it at the point of rejecting it, that's for sure. That came much, much later after I'd been, came down, left the farm, came to university in Melbourne, indeed haven't ever gone back, Julian, but I'm a city girl. But at university, I started to learn a little bit more, and friends at university told me and directed me towards learning a little bit more about, well, first, using animals to test cosmetics. I just thought that was ridiculous and I was amazed. And then I was shocked when I started to learn about, well, let's call it factory farming, but meaning having very large numbers of animals in sheds. So we're talking about here, we're talking about battery caging of hens and sows in piggeries that can't move, and meat chickens that are so crowded that they can hardly get to food and water and such things. They were just such an anathema to somebody who'd brought up on a farm, a mixed farm where animals were free to roam. So I think it was actually because I didn't think that was farming, and then my eyes were open. It really was an epiphany.
Glenys, you mentioned that that's something that's happened while you were at university. Was it because of what you were studying at university, or was it something that just sort of happened around that time?
Again, I think I missed it at university. It was in the studies that I did at university. It was some of the people I met in a few years toward the end of my course. But I did psychology, behavioural science at university, biology and such things. And some of the things that we did then, I look back and wonder how I could have done it. But then I realised that I didn't quite like it. For example, Julian, some psychology to do with early learning. We were assigned, students were assigned a couple of chickens each. I think it was to do with looking at the evolution of learning and depth perception and such things. But after those chickens that we were assigned were finished with the studies that we were, well, playing at really, they were put into a bin with CO2 to be gassed. In other words, they were no longer needed. So they were just being bred, if you like, for us, which I thought was terrible. And to see them being killed in that way, indeed, that's the way male chickens are killed even now in the industry. But I took the chickens home to the farm. So, I mean, I did care about them. I have to say to you, I think a fox got them. But the point was I was concerned. But going back to the original point, I really don't think I reacted then. It was only much later when I was working by then and at the tax office, and just happened to come across some old colleagues and was directed to somebody who was involved with one of the advocacy groups and suggested I read Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation. And it was then that it was all laid out in front of me, both the philosophy, but particularly the reality of what was happening to particularly farm animals in Australia.
On the year that made me, we're speaking with Victoria's Senior Australian of the Year for 2024, Glenys Ouges, who's the CEO of Animals Australia. Glenys, I mentioned that 1983 was when you started working for the organisation. It's just a little bit before that, 1980, that you've identified as the year that made you. Tell us about that year.
Yeah, oh, it was a big year, personally, and then as it related to animals. I was married that year, went overseas, backpacking around Europe, as you do with my then husband, first time going out of Australia. So it was all big for me. Mm. And indeed came back and was living with some friends that had been with university with us. And I also became a bikie at that time.
Tell us about that.
Well, I had grown up riding Aggie bikes, if you know what they are, meaning, you know, 90cc tiny little things on the farm. It was the cheapest way as a student and then starting out to get around. But we moved in with some people that were really into it. And, yes, I do recall wishing that I could get a Laverta bike, the Italian beautiful bikes back then. I couldn't, I have to tell you, Julian, because I am quite short and were too big for me. But I had a Suzuki instead that my husband cut down the seat off so that I could touch the ground. But having said that, I still got around. So that was interesting too. But I think just to go to the animal element of that year, that really was the epiphany, as I mentioned before, reading Peter Singer's book, and that was in 1980. And I got involved in a voluntary person on committee of what was called the Humane Society of Australia. It's not the same as HSI here now, but that organisation was part of the what is now Animals Australia, but then it was the Australian Federation of Animal Societies, an umbrella group. The group that I joined was part of that. And so it was a very big year because I also, at the same time as learning about this, happened to be watching on a Sunday evening 60 Minutes, the television program 60 Minutes. And Christine Townend, the founder of Animal Liberation New South Wales, but also of the Federation, she co-founded it with Peter Singer. She was on 60 Minutes with a reporter in a battery hen facility, that is a layer hen, caged hen facility. And I was sitting there eating chicken. Not that layer hens are the same as meat chickens, but that was an unusual thing for me. But I was, I was watching that, and I was looking at what I was doing. And the next day, my husband and I both went vegetarian. That was it. It was as quick as that, because even though I'd been learning in the months prior, certainly about factory farming, I think it all just came together then, and I just realised it wasn't just that I knew about it, but that I had to personally do something about it. And that was changing my own habits, but also, as I said, getting involved with voluntary groups.
I'm willing to bet that you're still a vegetarian to this day. Are you still a bikie to this day, Glenys?
Well, the bikey bit didn't last once. Having a fairly pregnant woman on a bike doesn't work. So no, and didn't go back after that. You can't really also take a toddler on a motorbike. I certainly am not just a vegetarian but a vegan. That happened a little afterwards, where I don't have animal products at all. And, of course, didn't wear bikey leathers either, Julian.
There's an interesting parallel as well with Lynn White being being in the police beforehand, a fairly straight-laced profession, and you were in the tax office, as you said. How does one go from the tax office to running Animals Australia?
Yeah, it's different being a public service, and yes, the tax office was good, but I was actually moved in the ranks, and I was actually involved in training officers and such things and dealing with people, and that was a much more social part of it. I wasn't pushing papers around so much late after that, but it is fairly straight-laced. But yeah, it really was an absolute change for me, both, if you like, from the farm and not being ever thinking I was going to be an advocate or needing to be an advocate at anything, and then feeling so, so strongly of the injustice of what we do and the fact that I didn't know. How could I not know? And what I've realised since, of course, is that most people don't know. Some people know little bits of it and are too scared to look further, and I totally understand that because it's not nice. But, yeah, the fact that once we do learn and once we do accept that we can be part of change, that we can be part of a better world, then I felt compelled, and I know many people and so many of my colleagues, of course, and more in the community want to do something about this.
Your citation as Victoria's Senior Australian of the Year highlights your work as one of the instigators behind the Australian Animal Welfare Strategy from 2004 and also the Australian Animal Welfare Standards for Poultry. Could you tell us about that work?
Yeah, that certainly right from the beginning of Animals Australia, and as I said, it was called Australian Federation of Animal Societies at the time, our input was all about providing information to government inquiries and to standard setting and such things. We've learnt now that that's only a small part of it, but we still undertake it, that is, in addition to the investigations and the community awareness campaigns that we run. We also do engage with those processes, political processes and standard setting, as I say. And the Australian Animal Welfare Strategy was just that, to bring people together, government funded, bring people together to work on solutions, that is improvement in standards, improvement in laws and such things. It wasn't as productive as we would like, and indeed there's a revamp of it just underway now. And the point is not so much to decide what you need to do, and you have to do that, but to actually implement it. And that's really difficult in this country. And that's what we've also found with, for example, and you just mentioned the new standards for poultry, and you know, poultry particularly with meat chickens, layer hens, turkeys and such things. The real difficulty in Australia is that, and it was when I started, it is still now, that animal welfare from a legislative point of view sits with the states, from a constitutional point of view, but also that it sits with agriculture departments, or at least traditionally it does, and that's still the case now with most states. And agriculture departments and agriculture ministers who make the decisions, of course, have conflicting, certainly dual roles here, animal welfare and also keeping farmers happy. And many, many farmers who obviously appreciate their animals, but have lots of conflicts there in that to change the way they do things costs money. And there's such pushback. I have to say it was way back then, it is still now. And so our system is very, very slow. The poultry standards, for example, already taken something like 7 years to get to a point where they're still only now suggesting and recommending to states that we have battery cages, that is all wire cages for hens for their entire lives, could still be legal right up to 2036 if something's broken.
And certainly the work that Animals Australia has done in the live export space shows that getting standards is one thing, but then there's a constant vigilance required in terms of compliance. Glenys, if you look back to what you were, say, hoping to achieve when you joined Animals Australia back in the 80s, how would you assess where Australia is today in terms of animal welfare, and how much further would you like to see things go?
Well, I think when I started out, because I felt the injustice so strongly, I really did think it change would be much faster than it has been. But the systemic issues that I just touched on as well in regard to the way decisions or standards are made and laws are made really gets in the way of fast change. We need change to be significant and it to be quick, but that doesn't happen. So I have been disappointed. Of course, there have been changes, but most of them are coming through community, consumer, corporate means. For example, like the battery hen issue that we just spoke of, because large fast food outlets like McDonald's and supermarkets like Coles, Woolies and the others have all had pressure, and they have been part of the change. For example, most of the supermarkets, well, all of the major supermarkets will not be selling cage eggs from next year. And that means that over time, there has been a real reduction in the number of hens that are in cages, most in our free range. And that's not come about because of legislation, as I mentioned, but it's come about through community concern. And so I do think that we've contributed significantly to that, we and colleague groups. I'm not suggesting Animals Australia is the only one working in this space, but we have been perhaps the most obvious, shall we say. And so I do think that we've moved along, not nearly as fast. And the fact that we're sitting here and talking in 2024 about issues that I would have been talking about in 1980 is testament to that. I'm thrilled that I and the animal movement, if you like, have been recognised through the Australian of the Year awards, because I think that does vindicate is probably our concern is a real social issue.
As I mentioned, the citation also describes you as a calm bulwark for animal justice. Where does that calmness come from, Glenys, particularly in a space which is so clearly driven by deep passion and sympathy for animals, but also involves having to confront really horrific situations and scenes over and over again?
Yeah, it is hard, and that's part of what I and my colleagues do. We have to see the worst. We do that on behalf of others who can't see the worst. But calm, I'm focused on talking to people about change and throwing your own views in an emotional or aggressive or assertive way is not the way to bring people along. Obviously, it takes a while for people to understand the way animals are being treated and the role that they can play in it. And that does take calm discussion. And I'm just so focused on walking with people and helping them to understand the problems that need to be solved and how they can help to do it, because we can, we all can, just as my example of consumer pressure that has led to getting hens out of cages.
What's it like being named Victoria's Senior Australian of the Year, Glenys?
Well, the senior bit took me by surprise, Julian. You sort of forget that you're considered senior. So that took me a little while. But it's meant as
a compliment, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. But other than that, it was surprising, shocking even. But I was so thrilled that animal welfare as an issue, as a social issue, I just felt it was part of indicating that it had come of age. And that is a real achievement, I think, that the selection committee would think that animal welfare was a good thing to begin with tick to. And I really felt that deeply. And I know, and that's been the most wonderful thing. My colleagues, people I don't even know who seem to know me, they themselves are so thrilled that that's happened. And so that's made me very, very happy.
Glenys, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you for the year that made me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Julian. It's been lovely.
And congratulations on being Victoria's Senior Australian of the Year. That and the fact that you're on this segment mean that you get naming rights for our musical end to the segment. What piece of music should we go out with today and why?
Oh, Julian, thank you. I would love you to play Joan Armatrading's Show Some Emotion. It's wonderful. Actually, I heard it for the first time in 1980, and that's because the person I was living with had an amazing stereo system, and Joan Armatrading's voice is amazing. But Show Some Emotion, it's a little bit of a twist on the fact that outset of my career in animal welfare, let's call it that, it was seen as a bad thing to show some emotion for the reasons I've spoken about, but it really just says to people, being genuine, being vulnerable and showing your emotions is a really good thing. So, yeah, I really love it.
More than happy to play it. Somehow I think it may not have been as much of a hit if it was called Show Some Calm. So let's hear Joan Armatrading's Show Some Emotion.
Show some emotion. Put expression in your eyes.
Yes, that shows some emotion. The very upbeat tune chosen by our guest on The Year That Made Me, Glenys Ouges. And I suppose it reflects her spirit of lighting things up, despite the very hard work she does. That's Joan Armatrading, of course, shows some emotion.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.